Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and we have Julio Diaz on the line. He is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock on Saturday. Also, host of the Pensacola Movie Club, where they watch movies and talk about them, which I think is a great project. I love that they do this. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. You guys, what, watch Death of a Unicorn? Is that right?
Yes. So this is... kind of it's an unusual movie. Obviously, you know, the title alone is kind of unusual. It's kind of pitched as a comedy horror movie. It's really more of a comedy than it is a horror movie. I mean, there's definitely some horrific elements to it, but I wouldn't call it a scary movie at all. It's a great cast in this. The leads are Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega, and they play a father and daughter.
Okay.
He's the attorney to this big, very wealthy pharmaceutical family. And he has been summoned to their lodge in the Canadian wilderness to go over some paperwork for him to take over as a proxy, because the head of the family, who is played by Richard E. Grant, is at death's door. On their way driving from the airport to the lodge, they hit a unicorn with their car.
As happens.
So everything ensues from here. They determine that the unicorn has this amazing healing properties. It corrects his eyesight. It clears up her acne. So, of course, the pharmaceutical family wants to exploit this.
I love this premise. It sounds fun. Okay.
Yeah. And
pointed.
You know, humor and horror ensue. Great cast. Not the ones I mentioned, but Taya Leone and Will Poulter are like the two funniest characters in this movie.
Oh, they're just, I'll take it.
The family are just horrible, horrible people, of course. They're horrible in like the way that it's just hilarious.
Gotcha.
So kind of like
good,
that,
interesting
like,
takeaway. Okay.
Imagine if the cast of Schitt's Creek were evil. Like that's kind of where we're going. They're like that kind of horrible.
I gotcha. All right, fair enough. Other movies that came out this week: A Worthy Man, or Working Man. Working Man.
A Working Man. Working Man. Probably not so much A Worthy Man.
Yeah.
at least based on the reviews. I will sum this up immediately by just saying that it stars Jason Statham.
Oh, okay. I got you.
So,
moving on.
Yeah, it is the
I know what the movie is.
Typical Jason Statham action movie. Yes, it is directed by, it's being promoted as from the director of The Beekeeper.
Ooh, I got you. Okay,
yeah.
Thanks. Yeah.
48% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah.
As they go. Yeah. I mean, which is kind of, you know, he's the new Steven Seagal, and
yeah,
that's fine.
If it doesn't have Fast and the Furious in the name and it stars Jason Statham, that's about where it's going to fall at this point. He's becoming the new Liam Neeson, who was the new, you know,
I got
name it, go down the line, the generic action star. All gets back to, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Steven Seagal, I guess.
There is a place in our culture for these movies, 100%, for sure.
Sure. That place is on TBS at 4 o'clock on a Sunday
or the expanded
afternoon.
Movie channel on the dish. The Woman in the Yard. This is a horror movie?
Yeah, this is another Blumhouse horror movie. So kind of, again, you know, this whole name brand thing. You know, Blumhouse does these, you know, movies that they turn out very quickly and they don't pay a lot of money for. And, some of them are decent and some of them are not. This one falls into the not, although it does star Daniel Deadwyler, who is, you know, quite an acclaimed actress. She is a woman who her and her husband are in a car accident. The husband is killed and she is severely injured and she's left alone to care for her two children in this remote farmhouse. And this mysterious woman starts appearing in the yard. When you know that this is a Blumhouse movie, you know that woman is no good.
Right. And she's not there to be the good fairy.
Yeah, yeah. And again, kind of like A Worthy Man, running in the 40% range on Rotten Tomatoes.
Got it. The Penguin Lesson. It's kind of an interesting title.
Yeah, this is the best reviewed movie of the week, running in the 80% range on Rotten Tomatoes. This stars Steve Coogan. He plays a disillusioned teacher who decides to go teach in Argentina in the mid-70s and thinks it's going to be a breeze. Finds out, of course, it's not. But then he rescues a penguin on the shores and finds some meaning in life through that. It's supposed to be very charming. 80% range on Rotten Tomatoes, like I said, so good reviews.
And I assume The Last Supper is a religious movie?
You can kind of infer that is what it is. It is the story of The Last Supper. So, not screened for critics. It's the Easter season. It's typical that we get this kind of movie.
Yeah, which is, again, there's an audience for a lot of things, and there's certainly an audience for these movies. And finally, Audrey's Children?
Yeah, this is a true story starring Natalie Dormer as a woman who was the first chief of pediatric oncology at a very famous hospital. She was also the co-founder of the Ronald McDonald House. In today's terms, I'm sure that she would be considered a DEI hire, and we're going to remove her from the Smithsonian because, that's the way we're going in the world right now. But, this movie hasn't been screened for critics either.
Okay. What are you guys going to watch next week, Julio?
Got a couple options next week. There's a movie called The Friend that's coming out that's starring Tim Heidecker and Paul Rudd that looks interesting. There's also a horror movie called Hell of a Summer that is directed by and starring Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things. So we're kind of waiting to see what the early reviews tease out before we make a choice, but we'll put it up on Facebook once we know.
Follow them on Facebook, the Pensacola Movie Club. Watch movies and talk about them with fellow movie likers or cinephiles, if you prefer the term. Let's Go Pensacola is 4 o'clock tomorrow on this station, News Radio 92.3. Julio, as always, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week. We lost him on the thank you, but absolutely. 8:16 on News Radio. That's twice today. What's wrong with me? 8:16 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay, and coming up, the Transgressive Memorial Service. Find out what it looks like when somebody really sells out to the gender anarchy agenda. And why did Monopoly get kudos? John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents or delays to let you know about, which is great news. Let's see. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. Even Highway 90, no issues with that. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
The Sanger Theater opened her doors on April 2nd, 1925. For 100 years, she's been the heart of Pensacola entertainment with vaudeville, movies, Broadway, and music. This month, Friends of the Sanger and the City of Pensacola are saying happy birthday to the Sanger, and we invite you to help us celebrate. Learn more about these events at pensacolasanger.com/100. And happy birthday, Sanger.
Hey, Pensacola. It's Christina Leavenworth with the Leavenworth team at Levin Rinky Realty. Your home is your most valuable asset, so make sure you're hiring a professional, the Leavenworth team. The Leavenworth team has the knowledge and expertise to help you buy or sell your home with confidence. Don't even think about making a real estate move without at least talking to us first. Contact us today at 850-378-1260. The Leavenworth team. Experience matters, and we're here to help.
Hi, this is Jeff Wayne, General Sales Manager of ADX Communications. Our team of expert marketing consultants, backed by over 200 years of combined experience, has helped hundreds of local businesses increase their market share. With four powerful radio stations, we can create a customized marketing plan tailored to your needs. And if digital advertising is part of your strategy, we've got you covered. ADX Digital offers cutting-edge solutions and exclusive products and strategies that gives your business an edge. Let's make 2025 a year of success for your business, whether it's on the market leader, Cat Country 98.7, News Radio 92.3, the area's top news talk station, the go-to for sports fans, ESPN Pensacola 99.1, Pensacola Playlist 94.5 for reaching women and lifestyle audiences, or ADX Digital, targeted digital strategies that drive results. One call, one team, endless possibilities. Call me, Jeff Wayne, at 850-262-6000.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings before pep talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
This week, dear brethren, I have very good news for you. We have only praise celebrations for some of our heroes in the faith. First, for the game company Hasbro, which recently announced the reinvention of one of the all-time most evil board games in history, Monopoly. Now, I know many of you might be thinking that Monopoly is evil because it's a mind-numbingly long game that often leads to hurt feelings and family fighting, but that's not the real issue. The fundamental problem with Monopoly is that it teaches, dare I say, preaches capitalism. The importance of private property, the owning of rental properties and growing them to their maximum abuse of the tenant, and even the hyper-development of natural resources into houses and hotels. So evil. You may not realize this, but the original developer of the precursor to Monopoly actually meant it to show people the ills of laissez-faire capitalism, elements of which criticism are still part of the game today, between the random chance events of life, the unfair police system, and the winner-take-all mindset of selfish greed that produces one king robber baron at the end of each unpleasantly long game. Unfortunately, the plan backfired, and millions of Americans and even people in other countries grew up loving the game, playing it ruthlessly, and even learning from it the ways of capitalism and the acquisition of monopolistic power rather than the evils of either. But now Hasbro has reinvented the game without paper money. Instead of having a banker and players who must track their balances and constantly do math to determine things like the return on investment of any given land opportunity, they will go paperless and play the game via an app on their phones. Now, it's true, the basic game elements remain the same, and so all the core problems of promoting capitalism persist. However, there are two big advantages of this new version. First, players no longer need to know any math to play, which means they do not learn how to do any math in the actual playing. This, of course, is absolutely essential to our political goals, since equality for all and the mathematical consequences of the redistribution of wealth are really bad. But if people can't do math, they won't know. And since people cannot successfully run businesses or keep tabs on their governments if they can't do math, moving Monopoly to a math-free game will only facilitate a mathless society who won't have to worry about acquiring wealth, since they'll be living in the poverty-stricken socialist utopia we will provide them. Second, anything that shoves people away from direct eye contact interaction with other people and onto their screens and phones is yet another big win for our cause, since a country of screen watchers and app users will ultimately be governed all the more easily by the thought leaders and executive guidance counselors of our order. So, for further separating our people from the mathematical foundations of a free and capitalist society, and for giving them one more reason to bury their eyes in their screens, we say bravo, Hasbro! Keep up the good work of destroying America. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Second, to the outstandingly incoherent social activism of all of those who are participating in the defacing and destroying of Teslas, we just want to say how much we are with you in spirit, if not actually with you in committing vandalism and arson. Yes, we of course feel your deep wrath towards the straight-arm-saluting South African who is being allowed to decimate the federal workforce by President Not a Chance in H-E Double Hockey Sticks We Ever Say His Name. And since the only logical way to show the almost feral anger we feel toward him is to take it out on completely unrelated private property made by his company and sold to people who at least used to think like we did, we want you to know how proud we are of what you're doing. If slashing tires, gouging side panels, breaking mirrors, and setting incendiary devices to destroy Teslas is not enough to soothe the savage progressive in you, all we can do is offer our advice to think bigger. Don't just attack Teslas. Since it's really the entire project of electric vehicles that Tesla has promoted, why not destroy other brands as well? Priuses, Volts, Lightnings, and even the very ugly Mach-Es. And while you're at it, why not destroy charging stations? Or maybe just to show Elon Musk how evil he is, you could start driving gasoline cars again. But what about other projects Elon Musk is in charge of? You could try to impede or destroy a SpaceX launch, maybe by chaining yourself to the missile silo. That would really show him. Or you could drive to disaster zones or Ukrainian battlefields and demolish every life-saving Starlink satellite system you find. Perhaps you have friends who use the social media platform X on their phones. Well, why not just grab those phones and break them? If enough people have their Teslas, their Starlinks, and their X-carrying phones destroyed, then no one will be giving money to Elon Musk anymore. That'll show him for sure. So just as we celebrate climate change activists who throw beans on artistic masterpieces or social justice warriors who win hearts and minds by laying down persuasively on freeways to make people late for work, we salute you, Cybertruck attackers everywhere. Keep doing the work and smile for the sentry mode cameras. Your felonious acts of violence bring joy to our bleeding hearts. Well done. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, our Golden Tambourine Award of the Week goes to Pennsylvania State Senator Lindsey Williams for her unflinching dedication to the true and holy cause of systemic gender anarchy, the third of our 6.5 sacred pillars of wokeness. Speaking courageously against a bill to ban transgender athletes from girls' sports in her state, she said,
"I want all girls to know that there are elected officials like me who believe female bodies are just as strong, as fast and capable as male bodies. Because notably, this bill only seeks to ban trans girls from playing sports, not trans boys."
Yes! Women's bodies are every bit as fast, strong, and capable as men's bodies. This basic fact of science is so completely proven that it's almost incomprehensible anyone dares to challenge it. But of course, we are not ignorant of what the gender bigots and the two genders only blasphemers say on this subject. Some of us have even had to hear President No Way Jose repeat these heresies from the Oval Office. We obviously realize that male runners routinely have faster times than female runners, and we certainly know that male weightlifters regularly lift more than female weightlifters, and of course, we admit there are no women in the NFL, MLB, NBA, or NHL. But is this proof that women's bodies are less strong, less fast, or less capable than men's bodies? Absolutely not. To say that would be offensive and a sexist insult to women's self-esteem, the sort of thing we know must be false because it would be mean for it to be true.
I want all girls to know that there are elected officials like me who would never underestimate your ability to beat a boy at their own sport. Because that's what the premise of this bill assumes, that female bodies are less than male bodies, that girls are at a, quote, automatic disadvantage and can't possibly compete against boys, even though girls do it every day.
And since mean or offensive ideas must be false, we applaud Senator Williams for simply stating what must be true, no matter what the apparent evidence from the world of sports shows to the contrary. But of course, the heretics ask, if women are truly as capable as men in every way, why aren't there any in the professional sports or the Olympics who are beating men head-to-head in competition? Well, isn't it obvious? Because the system is rigged against women. The entire apparatus of sports is obviously built on systemic sexism. And just like the SATs were biased against minorities, sports is biased against girls. If the stopwatches show a slower result, it must be because the clocks are manipulated to lie. If the weights lifted are less, obviously it's because someone is swapping them out between events. Women aren't in male professional sports because they're systemically excluded from tryouts, told they're less capable, and brainwashed into believing that women can't compete against men. That's got to be the reason. It's only logical. That's why this whole idea of allowing transgender athletes to play in women's sports is entirely the wrong approach. What we should do instead is eliminate the separation of men's and women's sports and watch the equality manifest itself. It's high time to tear down the walls of this athletic apartheid. Time to end the era of separate but equal in sports. Yes, we must desegregate the fields and courts of this great land of equality. Integration is the only way forward. Now, of course, for a while, we need to implement some gender-affirmative action in the newly integrated teams to make up for the decades of Jane Crow regulations that kept the female athletes down with lower funding, inferior training, and uncomfortable uniforms. So, yes, an integrated NFL will require that 50% of the players be women, until such time as women prove that they are just as strong as the top offensive tackles, just as fast as the top wide receivers, and just as capable as the most talented safeties. I'm sure it will only take, what, a couple of seasons. But because we have our gender anarchy principles to guide us, we know this will work, and our dreams of a gender-blind sports will come true. So well done, Senator Williams, for saying the truth before it's true, so that we might act as if it's true and make it true through sheer repetition of its truthiness. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
829 on News Radio 92.3. John Pickens has traffic for us. John?
Truthiness? I'm still trying to get that one down.
I just don't know for integrated volleyball whether the men should wear the bun huggers or whether the women should wear the shorts. But, you know, whatever. Anyway, we'll figure these things out later. Go ahead, John.
Truthiness. Okay, no accidents to let you know about right now. I-10 are flowing smoothly. Even Highway 90 looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks, John. In the newsroom, we've got Steve Taylor sitting in for David Wayne this morning with our headlines. Steve?
Another 10,000 federal employees are losing their jobs. The Department of Health and Human Services says it's letting go thousands of their employees across several agencies. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says the restructuring will see the department consolidate from 28 to 15 divisions. And the 25% tariffs that start next week on autos and auto parts imported into the U.S., it's impacting Detroit tourism. The Ambassador Bridge and the Detroit Windsor Tunnel are both experiencing a notable decline in travelers across the border in February due to the threat of the tariffs, and that's what's happening.
Thanks so much, Steve. I appreciate that. Oh, by the way, I got a phone call that I talked to a lady who said, she thought we were too dismissive of The Last Supper as a movie, and I said, one of the things about reviewing the religious movies is they don't get screened for critics, so we don't really have much to say one way or the other. And of course, I'm definitely not dismissive, but I appreciate the concern. I always, disagree with me. Call me, text me.
Fox News, I'm Therese Crowley. A rush to rescue in Thailand and Burma, rocked by an enormous earthquake, magnitude 7.7.
I was in my Lazy Boy, and all of a sudden it moved back and forth, and then it toppled over.
Both Thailand and Burma with many casualties and deaths, including Bangkok, where a high-rise under construction collapsed, and a mosque and a hotel in Burma. Vice President J.D. Vance is now heading up the U.S. delegation to Greenland today. Russian President Putin, speaking from the Arctic Circle, says it's a mistake to underestimate U.S. intentions to annex Greenland. Putin vows to protect Russian assets in the Arctic. New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik agrees to forego her nomination as U.N. ambassador to help the slim GOP House majority pass the Trump agenda. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning and happy Friday. It's 8:31, 70 degrees right now and partly sunny. I'm Steve Taylor in for David Wayne on News Radio 92.3. She's running again, and she's running in the most conservative congressional district in Florida. But Democrat Gay Valamont knows she faces an uphill battle. After losing by a 2-1 margin against Matt Gaetz back in November, he resigned several weeks later. Valamont faces Republican Jimmy Patronis in the April 1st special congressional election. Yesterday, she told Chris Bryan on Pensacola Right Now she's hoping this time is different.
I want Republicans to take a chance on me. And, if I don't do what I say I'm going to do, fire me in 2 years. I don't believe that congressmen, congress people, representatives should be there forever anyway.
Patronis and Valamont both said they'll work to protect District 1's military bases, improve services for veterans, and lower homeowners insurance costs, but they have completely different views on most of those domestic issues, and their view of President Trump's first 2 months in office. With Election Day almost here, both candidates say their ultimate goal is to serve the people of Northwest Florida. A man was arrested early yesterday morning after allegedly driving under the influence and crashing into a concrete median. According to the Florida Highway Patrol, the single vehicle accident occurred about 4 a.m. at the intersection of Mobile Highway and Green Street. Witnesses reported seeing three men in a white Toyota Tacoma that crashed into the median but fled the scene shortly after that impact. Officers later found the truck parked in a U-Haul lot where the driver, identified as 45-year-old Bradley Roland Berenson, was discovered asleep behind the wheel. He was taken to a local emergency room for minor injuries and subsequently arrested. Berenson faces multiple charges, including DUI, hit and run, and an open container violation. His passengers will not face any charges. The only Republican to formally enter the 2026 race for governor in Florida is holding a kickoff rally today in his hometown of Bonita Springs. Barry University's Sean Foreman says Congressman Byron Donalds will get to introduce himself to the voters.
He's really not that well known outside of his Southwest Florida congressional district and those who watch him on cable TV.
Donalds has already received President Trump's endorsement and, along with that, more than $3 million in donations. Governor Ron DeSantis' wife, Casey, is expected to toss her hat into the ring, and there are rumors her team is making calls to state lobbyists asking them not to support Donald's. Well, the weekend is just ahead of us. Let's check that forecast from Channel 3.
One last dry day to wrap up the work week before we see some changes in the forecast as we head into the weekend. For your Friday, expect sun and clouds with temperatures in those lower 70s. Going into tonight, mostly cloudy in the upper 60s. Saturday, increasing chance for some showers and storms, and that lasts into the second half of the weekend as well. Be sure to stay with us on WEAR. I'm meteorologist Marion Caldwell with your first warning weather update.
Let's check in with John Pickens for traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you, nor delays. Everything is looking good so far this morning. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks, John. Right now, 70 degrees in Pensacola, 67 in Gulf Breeze, and 59 in Milton at 8:35. Next news is at 9. Breaking news, of course, happens anytime. Right now, let's check out what's happening in the financial world. This is Your Money Now on News Radio 92.3. Inflation rose more than expected in February as consumers were spending less. The Core Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, a key inflation measure released today by the Commerce Department, shows a 0.4% increase. That's right, a 0.4% increase for the month. That's about a tenth higher than what analysts were predicting. Annual inflation rates held steady at 2.5%. Excluding food and energy costs, annual inflation was at 2.8%. At the open, the Dow Jones average was down. Looks like it's in red territory, down 49 points at 42,553. NASDAQ was down 44 points at 19,946. And looks like I'm trying to find the S&P. It looks like it's down 9.25 at 5,730. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
News Radio Pensacola has you covered no matter where you are or how you like to listen. Tune into our frequencies on 92.3 FM, 95.3 FM, and AM 1620 for the latest breaking news, local updates, and in-depth analysis. Can't be near a radio? No problem. Stream us live on our website or through our convenient app. Available for download on your mobile device. Plus, with our smart device integration, you can ask your virtual assistant to play News Radio 92.3, and we'll be right there with you. It's News Radio Pensacola.
To the hip, hop, the hip, of a hip, hip, hop, you don't stop.
I will definitely call you back later, then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. That means it is time for us to talk with some friends in studio about the events and issues and topics of the week or whatever comes up, because it can sometimes go in a completely different direction. I love that. That's the value of having friends. You never know where it's going to go. It's organic. Did I say it right, Josh?
I love it. Organic, yes.
Josh Newby is the executive director of the Council on Aging in West Florida. Josh, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're so loud. Does he need to be so loud?
You want me to peek the mic?
Too late.
I can clip it? Oh, okay, great.
Our other guest here today is Jonathan Owens, local personage? Former candidate for county commission. What did you say, rabble rouser?
Rabble rouser.
Oh, nice.
Josh gave me a new a new title.
That's right. Your email signature.
Nice.
We're having a conversation, sort of. We haven't really talked about it much on the show, but the state is considering doing away with CRAs. Now, the audience, I figure, many people have no idea what a CRA is, and that's fine. That's our job is to educate. I, for the longest time, didn't understand what a CRA is, and I feel like I still only about 70% get it. But the Community Redevelopment Agency, or Community Redevelopment Areas, because there are certain zones that get designated as basically blighted. And
the agency manages the area.
And the CRA is it's usually the Board of County Commissioners acting as if they're not the Board of County Commissioners, as if they're a different agency, or the City Council acting as if it's something else when it's really just them with different gaveling, essentially. They have
different chair people.
But the idea, as I understand it, is that you have these blighted so-called areas, and it's to take the improvement in the property values in those areas and fund it back into projects that do more of that improving, sidewalks and building facades and roofs and just, you know, beautification, that kind of stuff, in the effort of targeting the tax improvement towards improving the taxes even further. The idea is to spiral it up over time. The state is thinking about getting rid of these entirely. That would involve sunsetting their opportunity to start projects, I think October 1st is the deadline that if it goes into effect, they'd be able to live out their current existence, but they wouldn't be able to start new projects, wouldn't be able to form new CRAs and so forth. I don't have a strong opinion about this, but it does seem to create a lot of squabbling.
It does.
So, Jonathan, you were in county government for a long time. You know county government as well as anybody. Should we not have CRAs? Are they useful? Are they not? I mean, it's the basis of the fight between the county and the Escambia Children's Trust, mm-hmm. an incredibly obtuse topic that we've tried to talk about a couple of times. But your thoughts?
CRAs, depending on where they municipality versus the unincorporated area.
Okay.
CRA that worked, City of Pensacola. The CRA was Palafox. Palafox's mm-hmm. progressively got better over time. Is it as a result of the CRA? Depends on where you stand on it, right? I mean, so in the City of Pensacola, did a CRA work? Yeah, it worked. Has it worked in the county? Does Brownsville look any different than it did 20 years ago? Does Warrington look any different than it did 20 years ago? Does Barrancas look any different than it did 20 years ago? Those are all CRA areas, and now you have a new CRA that's coming in to Myrtle Grove. We'll see if it's going to make a difference. But historically, my perception, my opinion, has the CRA made a difference? Have the money been reinvested into that CRA in those areas that I mentioned, you know, Palafox, in the county, Brownsville? Sidewalk infrastructure has definitely improved in some of those areas. Mm-hmm. But does sidewalks make the area better? Or should the CRA funds be used for something else other than facade grants or in improvements like that? I personally believe if you're going to trap money with a TIF inside of a CRA,
Tax increment financing basically takes the tax that comes off of the improvement and the value and puts it back into the CRA. Go ahead.
Right. It should be used for infrastructure. Warrington, Barrancas, your biggest impediment in those areas, those are both FDOT facilities, but yet you still have areas along there that are on septic tanks and not sewer. A commercial redevelopment is not going to happen unless there's sewer infrastructure there. Who's going to go build a brand new building and put it on a septic tank?
Right.
Now, what typically happens is you have a building that's been there. They use the CRA funds. You can apply for grants to do a facade grant, but it's still the same building, just with a different wrapper.
So you give me a thought, okay? And my thought is, it seems like the problems with CRAs are the question of overall success, and also the problem of willy-nilly decisions about what does or doesn't get funded.
Right.
And a lot of it comes down to feelings about personalities, or do we like that business? Or like in Milton, they're arguing about this all the time over who's gotten too many of them, who's gotten too few of them. Is this even something we should be doing? You give me the idea with it being focused on infrastructure. It almost seems like what we ought to have is these are the standards in infrastructure that we want to have normalized, and CRAs should produce the money to get those up to standard, and then the CRA shouldn't exist anymore. That would tell you exactly where the money's going to go. It would accomplish a quantifiable objective, and it wouldn't be subject to as much of the gray area, who's my friends, that kind of stuff problem. Am I thinking about this the right way?
Right.
Because septic to sewer, you're totally, I mean, that's a bare standard minimum for economic development.
Right.
And so that, get that done.
Can I ask, Josh? Because 9 times out of 10, I'm going to support home rule. And why the state preemption against this? I just don't know. What's their argument?
You mean what they're trying
what
to do?
Yeah, what trying against to, the CRAs, what yeah. problem are you trying to right. solve?
And also, you know, so I see that. But it also seems like one of the other problems with the CRA is anything that is done in the guise of the CRA could be done without a CRA existing if the county or the city just decided to fund the project.
Like put a master plan in.
Exactly.
Right, but without the incentive or the pretense of the CRA, they're not going to do it. And even when they do, they that's a whole other subject, how they pilfer it. But I guess I don't really have a dog in the fight, but hearing your framing of it, I would support CRAs. So that's why I'm wondering why the state is against it.
Because it seems to you like, well, let the locals do what the locals are going to
do. It's home rule.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Does home rule always work well?
I think in local infrastructure, it does.
I would much rather have home rule, Josh.
Sure, thank you.
I don't mean to be disagreeing. I'm with you. That's why you're
removing property taxes strips away home rule.
Having what now?
Removing property taxes strips away the potential for home rule.
I agree with the end game. I don't agree with the mechanism. But okay, fair enough. I see what you're saying. And the Palafox one is interesting because what you're asking is, can we show that it was because of the CRA? And of course, the problem is you never know what would have happened if we hadn't had it.
Right.
You can't go back and run the alternate universe and see, or what we sometimes call a counterfactual or a hypothetical, you know, what if it hadn't happened? Would it have still turned out? You know, it's easy to take a victory lap over something that would have happened anyway.
Right.
It, you know, not because it would have happened naturally, but because decisions would have been made that produced this result that weren't dependent on it having a CRA.
But that's also the only heuristic you have.
Right. Of course. Right. You don't know what would have happened.
Was the CRA the spark that lit the fire, right? Or was it a developer that said, you know what? I'm tired of this looking this way. I'm going to spend my own money and take my own risk and go make this better.
Right.
Broken windows, right?
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. We're talking to Josh Newby and Jonathan Owens here in the studio for The Rab. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No,
you look surprised that I'm coming to you.
On the fives.
At actual 8:45 and no seconds.
Look at that.
I know.
I only get in trouble for having the nines. I never get credit for hitting it right. Go on.
No accidents to let you know about. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. Even Highway 90's looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
See?
Congratulations.
I feel like that was a very shaded way of saying that. So fine, whatever. So we started with one that I knew Jonathan would be super passionate about. Let's start with one that I haven't actually had a chance to cover yet because I'm still listening to the meeting, but I know you're passionate about this, Josh. The hearing the other day over whether to keep funding NPR and PBS led in what I would only describe as a disgraceful manner by Marjorie Taylor Greene, who kind of proved in her comments the importance of having a widespread free public education system that she may not have participated fully in. I'm not a fan, in case you can't tell. I was hoping for a good conversation about the legitimacy of PBS and NPR.
Yeah.
And I, so far has not manifested, but I'm curious what will happen the rest of the 2 hours. The arguments against that are the decent ones are things like, well, there's a wide open information space right now. It's not needed anymore. And you wind up competing against commercial endeavors like us.
Yeah.
Because they take advertising money out of the pool of advertising. It's not called advertising, but they do run sponsorships.
Right, right.
That's money that could otherwise be spent, say, with a commercial endeavor like ours. So now the government is competing against private industry on an unfair plane because they don't pay taxes either. And they lean heavily to the left.
I'm the resident liberal here, but I think I believe in NPR. I believe in PBS. I believe in the philosophy. I grew up watching the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer.
Great show.
Great show. They have lost their way. You had that Free Press editorial last year.
That's the Yuri Berliner piece.
Yes. And you had Catherine is her name, the CEO. Catherine Mayer.
Maybe, yeah, that sounds right.
The CEO. And I thought her testimony was really lacking.
Missing the point.
Yeah.
Not taking on the objection.
And you know what? I am a leftist. They're too leftist. They're too identitarian. Every Science Friday is about climate change. I believe in climate change. You don't need to, you know, talk it into the ground. They take too much democratic orthodoxy for granted and don't challenge it. And I saw an analysis the other day, and I don't know how true it is, but it is sort of a confirmation bias at this point. When they name a Democrat, they will name two good things. Kamala Harris, who's seeing wide support and is the first minority candidate, blah, blah, blah. And then they'll list a Republican, you know, Mitch McConnell, who once posed in front of a Confederate statue. And I'm sorry, but that bias is so clear.
Yeah.
And even though I mostly agree with the bias, it causes me to question the other things that I don't have knowledge.
You don't know enough to know whether you're being getting biased or getting real reporting. Right. No, I completely agree. And let me say, as a conservative, I listen to NPR.
Yeah.
At least some of the programs.
Great.
Some have been better, some have been worse. Okay. You know, Judy Woodruff was amazing, right?
Yeah.
But even things like putting out the Capitol Update is incredibly good. They don't air it on TV anymore, but it's an incredibly good program. Then, you know, and 1A is not as good as what used to be.
It used to be great.
You know, it used to be much better. And some of the programs are great. This is NPR we're talking about.
Yeah.
But some of the programs are fantastic and some are not. But it is absolutely a leftist production. And for that, I wouldn't mind except government funding of leftism is what bothers me. And competitive disadvantage against conservatism is what bothers me.
Would you support it? I'm always curious about this. Let's take for granted that NPR, and I think to a lesser extent PBS, has a liberal bias.
I agree with that assessment, by the way.
Would you support government funding of center-right public radio?
I have a really mixed feelings about government funding of news media, and here's why. I see it work in Britain extraordinarily well. BBC is a great resource for information. In fact, if you can't figure out, you know, what the truth is of sometimes an American issue, go watch BBC. They'll probably have good coverage of it. And that's both in print, online, and also, you know, over the air. I don't know, but it should be even across the board.
Agreed.
And that's the problem.
It might become that over the next 4 years. I mean, look, the pendulum. It's a pendulum swing,
right?
With anything in politics, especially obviously government funding, it will move left and right depending on who's in leadership at the time. And we're seeing the pendulum swing
hard.
I think NPR legitimately. I think NPR doesn't realize how far off center they are.
I mean, no one tells you.
Right. Well, the Yuri Berliner piece is fantastic.
Yeah,
he surveyed the registrations of like 90 people in the newsroom, 85 Democrats, no Republicans, you know, that kind of thing. And you can't even see the bias. It's so thick. Like, I mean, I used to do a podcast with a woman who was, you know, worked for NPR. I mean, she, you know, I like her, but, you know, she didn't even realize how far off she was in terms of style book and presentation of ideas, framing, all of that stuff. But I will also say, online, NPR's sort of, it's not print because it's online, but their print journalism versus is actually quite good.
Yeah.
I read every day I look at the NPR online to see, you know, what stuff are you covering? Also because I know they're going to catch stuff and say it differently than Fox will.
Sure.
And I want to catch everybody's view.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So if I could somehow get the on air to come back, you know,
sure.
to being reasonable. Even reasonably off-center is okay as long as it's sort of within the realm. But you're right. The counterpoint, the real presentation, it's a folk music-driven identity politics.
It is.
Soft, slow view.
It's become a stereotype of itself.
I mean, when Parks and Rec does satire of NPR,
it's dead on.
It's 100% accurate.
Yeah. Has it ever had a conservative slant? I mean, I just don't know.
I'm not old enough to know that I can say, but I don't think so.
I was just curious.
I think we're, as a society here in the U.S., you're talking about the difference between the BBC and in the U.S., are we so far polarized now that we're at a point where any kind of criticism is just dismissed? Oh, well, you're this, like you were talking about.
Well, that's the Trump derangement syndrome, Trump affinity syndrome.
I want constructive criticism. I want someone to tell me, you know, you're wrong, and here's why.
Right.
Okay, I'll take that.
And it's
like you. You and I have had many debates where we don't agree.
Absolutely.
But it gives us a different perspective. Does NPR and PBS, are they so far to the left that they're like, oh, any kind of criticism is just dismissed?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they view it as normalizing fascism.
Right.
Right. I mean, I've literally heard
this is not
those
an open
con.
This is not a fair debate.
Correct.
You know, you're platforming evil.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And when everybody on the right is a Nazi, how do you compete with that?
Right.
Now, do the Nazis?
By the way, Josh is saying
right?
when you view it that way. Josh is not saying
it's that way. Take that out of quote.
Right.
Josh Newby saying everybody
exactly.
on the right's a Nazi.
But yeah, when that is your frontline defense, then
you said frontline. That's clever.
Hey, yes.
Accidentally.
I love the narrator. Anyway, you're right. You can't have a healthy debate when everybody just splits to their sides in the most extreme way.
And I mean, look, I'm sympathetic to the claim that they're the radio station that reaches a lot of places that don't otherwise get reached. I'm certainly sympathetic to the educational value of some of the, you know, early childhood development programs that PBS is famous for.
Right.
I certainly wish they wouldn't occasionally or more than occasionally throw in political elements that don't need to be there and are from the left. But you can't really argue the educational value of a lot of what they're programming,
absolutely.
For sure.
Who's today's Mr. Rogers?
Oh, my kids are too old. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
So,
who's today's Mr. Rogers, right? Because that would be the
as a
closest
comparison.
Thing that you would have to a conservative type
right.
kids
Maybe.
Show, you know?
Was Mr. Rogers conservative?
I don't know. I'm just saying my perspective, right?
Oh, see, it, okay.
At least it's not something that conservatives somewhat would complain about.
Okay, right. This is a curious conversation because he famously bathed his feet with a black man, right? And at the time, that was seen as,
oh my God,
right?
Right.
So was Mr. Rogers liberal for his day? And will we look back on current PBS like?
Are you implying these lines and categories shift over time, Josh?
I'm just throwing it out there. Will in 30 years we look back at a gay couple being on Arthur or whatever as the right call?
Well, and that's obviously the question, right? I mean, is that, you know, the things that are edgy today, you know, having Uhura on Star Trek, you know, I don't know about that. And now you look back and think, well, good for them.
Right, exactly.
You know, and which is, it's a fair question. Even this coming from somebody who opposes a lot of the things that are being proposed as the right direction to go. I think historically you have to acknowledge that sometimes you move in a direction and it turns out to be the correct one, and sometimes you move in a direction and you're like, oh man, we really shouldn't have done that.
Sure.
That was not a great idea. Yeah. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to let you know about. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
gosh, we have so many things that we could talk about. I don't even know exactly which one to go with. The UWF thing. You're a graduate.
I am.
Jonathan, you're both graduates, UWF. I mean, I'm not. I have two kids. You know, one graduate and one's there. I don't know. Thoughts? This week, the one Senate committee refused to advance Adam Kissel, go ahead and advance, and he's one of the governor's picks.
Right.
They did advance the three Board of Governors picks, which were not DeSantis' picks, and they, with very light questioning, also one I haven't gotten into the audio for. I'll do it for next week. But I don't know. Josh?
It is so transparently craven to me what DeSantis is doing, and I really... Do either of you have a defense for it? Because I don't. I you know me, Andrew. I try my best to see it from the other side. Is there any defense?
So I assume what you mean is kind of the Rick Outson theory, which I don't think is wrong, by the way, which is that what he's trying to do is New College 2.0.
Absolutely.
He's put a majority of his people that he can count on to do what he wants to do in there, and they are going to change everything that he views as woke and realign it to the center right and renovate things for a university that doesn't have these flaws and doesn't need the help, is doing very, very well on its own already. Thank you very much. I think
that's right. It's craven.
Yeah, and my view is, I think there's a truth in that, but I have tried my best to look at the individual appointees and judge them on their merits. So far, I don't see Scott Yenner as needing to be on that board at all.
Certainly not chair.
Even though I'm sympathetic to some of the ideas he's advocated. Yeah, it's definitely not chair. Adam Kissel, on the other hand, is a great addition. I like him quite a bit, but they're not doing that kind of analysis yet. Jonathan?
What better place to test it than the conservative end of the world for Florida, right? I mean,
If
it could be done here, you might be able to do it somewhere else. But try that in a small town. Try that in Orlando, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, if you're testing out the market here.
I think it's a misfire in this sense.
Right.
He had no idea how much people loved UWF.
Yeah.
And was counting on we're conservatives, we'll do whatever the conservative thing is, when, yeah, but we're also, Pensacola is a more liberal city, and everybody loves UWF.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Even with its fair enough criticisms of, you know, liberalism in the culture, the classroom stuff and the academic performance and all of the rest is, like, this is not the one you need to fix.
We have, as the Panhandle or Pensacola, have always strived, in my perception, have always strived to be like, look at us. We're just as good as you are, University of Florida or FSU.
Right.
UWF's a great school.
We both absolutely
attended there, right?
Agreed.
So it's like someone saying something negative about the Blue Angels or the sound of a jet flying over. Yeah. What do you mean?
We have
that's the sound of freedom, and that's the Blue Angels. You don't like it, move.
Right.
Right. Right. So same kind of thing, same kind of passion goes with UWF. I think it was a misstep on his part on trying to, like, swing it that far. Just because he didn't understand the passion. It's kind of like, you know, Auburn versus Alabama. You know, hey.
And I will look, I don't think I've ever said this on the radio, but when we first moved here, my perception of UWF was, I mean, it's kind of a glorified community college. That was my perception when I first moved here. Okay, I didn't know it at all. But obviously we have changed our tune on that, because I've seen what it can do, and it was good enough for my kids.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and probably all three of them will go there. So he didn't know. He miscalculated. His biggest error was, why not find some people who are from here?
Yeah.
Not that being from here is crucial, but if they were from here and were connected to the community and were really conservative, you wouldn't have the easy blowback that he's getting on who are these people from Utah and Virginia and whatever, right?
Yeah.
So do you think he abandons it or do you think he keeps fighting? Because he seems like a guy who backs down a lot.
Yeah, sure. No. He's never abandoned anything.
Yeah. He's at the end of his term. Why would he back down?
Exactly.
Ride it out.
Yeah. So I am a little worried about the future of this. But again, looking at the individuals, it'll maybe be okay. Josh and Jonathan, thank you.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
Good morning, I'm Steve Taylor, and here's what's happening. A large souvenir store is making waves in the Far Beach. We'll talk about that story and more after Fox News on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.